Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Turkey Crossing with Paul Bogish. And just real quick, in reference to my last podcast, I said I was going to take the next few podcasts and talk about the work I was doing for the next couple weeks. I am a portfolio scorer for the state of Connecticut in the BEST program. And what that is the second-year teachers pass in a portfolio of their work. It gets graded to see if they get their certification. And after talking to the project leader and after she talked to the best of the best, the person who's in charge of the whole darn thing, decided that it'd be best if I waited until after the program's over. I guess there's some confidentiality things. And anyway, after a brief conversation, it was decided to wait until it's all over. We're not going to talk about the BEST program today, so now, Maestro, cue the music. Alright, so I'm not on my bike today. Driving to where the scoring is. I live up high, well, at least for Connecticut, and as soon as I pull out of my driveway with my bike, everything's downhill, so I can't podcast on my way to anywhere because it's too windy, and all you would hear is and by the time I got to where the school was that I was scoring, to drive home, it was too hard, the hills were too big, and so otherwise I'd be huffing and puffing in between talking and words, and by the time I got to a point where it was level, I was still huffing and puffing, so I decided to wait until I got home and I was a little more relaxed. So now I'm taking the recorder along as I do the animals. In case you missed it, I do have a small little farm, and sheep, pigs, chickens, goats, that sort of thing. So I'll take you along while I do the chores. Not to get off track and do non-educational things here, but I did yesterday go and get some grain up at the grain mill. Excuse me there. And, excuse me one second. I just have to scoop it out of the trailer. I was a little lazy. All the grain is still in the trailer. But while I was at work today, it's at a brand new middle school. And as I was walking down one of the hallways, there was something on the wall that gave me the inspiration for today's podcast. It was, you know, one of those emergency, you know, press here if there's an emergency, you know, fire alarm sort of things, I guess. And what I found interesting was that it's this big silver box-like thing, and on the silver box, there's a big button, and it says, press here for help. About 6 inches away from the metal box, there's another, like, sign on the wall, and the sign says, press 3-inch button for help. And even underneath that, in Braille, I suppose it says the same thing. And when I read that, I thought that was a little bit of overkill. Having to have a sign telling you to press the button that says if you need, well, you know, a sign that says if you need help, press the button that says press for help. And it got me thinking about directions that we do for kids. I struggle mightily with giving kids directions. And I know that sounds like a kind of a funny thing, but I don't struggle being able to give directions so kids can understand what to do. That I can do after 17 years, I hope. What I struggle with is, this is not the right way to say it, but how many directions to give, or how clear should I be in my directions? How much interpretation should I leave up for the kids? How much should I leave open? How do I give enough direction to allow them to get to the end, but not enough so that they're basically just following this linear do step one, do step two, do step three, and in the end the darn thing looks exactly how I wanted it to look, and none of their creativity and imagination showed up in it. I struggle a lot with that. And what I wonder, excuse me one second, is every year when I start, kind of have to assess each group. And sometimes I have a group in which they struggle a lot in the beginning of the year. And the thing that they end up struggling with is figuring out what I want. And they might spend months, not the whole class, but certain individuals, always coming up to me and saying, is this what you want? 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 And it kind of drives me crazy that when I give an assignment, the kids have been kind of programmed to, I don't want to necessarily say please the teacher, but they've kind of been programmed to think that they don't have the ability to figure out what to do. They've kind of been programmed that they need the teacher to figure out the answer to each question. And I get a lot of kids who, in the first, I'd say up to about the four-month mark, get really ticked at me. I've had everything from people yell at me, kids yell at me, to lots of tears. Kids who get frustrated, kids who will think that I'm a meanie, kids that think that, they can't do it and I should be helping them, and since I'm not helping them, I'm letting them down and I'm letting them fail and this, that, and the other thing. And even though I may have been wrong once or twice in my career, but usually, I try to read the kids very carefully. Those kids that are most frustrated earlier in the year with the lack of directions end up being the kids who progress the most by the end of the year. And it's funny how usually it's those kids that get most frustrated in the beginning of the year with lack of direction that end up coming back and visiting the most. And I'm not proposing getting rid of all directions. I think especially the first time you do anything, you do have to give them a good set of directions. Even doing something as simple as a skit, write a play on whatever. If you've never had kids who have done a skit or, gone to a play, they're going to need some direction. But, if you've done skits, if you've read skits in class, I think it's kind of cool to, at some point in the year, if that sort of thing fits in, to tell the kids, all right, here's our essential question, write a skit expressing your answer, and letting them go. Helping them work through their frustration of, I can't do it. One second, just got to feed the pigs here.
Oh, come on.
Pigs are getting big. I think it's really cool that at about the four-month mark, if you have slowly worked with your kids to kind of wean them off directions, if you've slowly worked with your kids to wean them off you, if you've slowly worked with your kids to get them to believe that they have the power to figure things out, some really cool stuff can happen when you don't give them directions. And I think what happens a lot of times is when I've worked with student teachers or even when I've tried to convince other people to do this, that the first time you do, project with the kids in which you're trying to purposely wean them off you in directions, you might end up having some problems. And it might seem like things aren't going very well. But, you know, you gotta keep going with it. Sorry, just replacing the pig water. It takes the kids, just like if you're going to teach the kids, I don't know, how to write persuasive. Oh, no, I fell in the mud. Oh, that was bad. Live on the podcast. Oh, I have a series of rocks that I step on to get to the pig water. And with all the rain here, oh, man. Oh, no. I'm sorry. There's like a foot of pig mud I just fell into. All right, this is super. This is great. Thank goodness you can't smell things on the podcast. Oh, anyway. I really want to swear, but I won't. All right, hold on. All right, I don't think these sneakers and socks will ever be worn again in public. But, all right, anyway, getting back to the doing the things with the kids without many directions. I think a lot of times when teachers first let their kids free to have some creativity and to let their imagination go and to innovate on their own without following step-by-step teacher directions, the assignment never turns out the way the teacher expected it to. Automatically, we think that's bad. I mean, with the very few teachers that I've had conversations with us about that have attempted to allow their kids some space for their own ideas, by the end of the project, they always feel like they've failed. And you know what? When I started giving my kids a lot of freedom, I always felt like they failed too. And I can tell you that when I first started to try to wean kids off of me, when I first tried to, basically my goal was to make myself useless. Well, not that extreme, but so that by the end of the year, the kids would be self-directed, on their own, and totally looking at me as just like, you know, the coach side of this type of person in the room. When they needed help, they'd come and get me as that extra support and not as the main focus. When I first started, I made it exactly one project into the year. And, sorry, just collecting the eggs. Hold on one second. I made it exactly one project into the year. And it was horrible. You know, it wasn't, looking back, it probably wasn't horrible, but the way I interpreted it was horrible because it didn't turn out the way I thought it would. And the next year, I decided to give it another go. And I basically went one project further. You know, maybe I did this for a month. And didn't go very well. And the next year, I made it another month and so forth and so on until I really and truly was about maybe 6-7 years into trying this. I made it to about 6 months. And then finally, some like magic started happening in class. And even though the previous 6 months were frustrating, the last 4 months were magical. And what I realized, and what I came back with the next year, and this is probably, you know, 12 years into teaching, which took me to finally realize this, is that when I started off in September, I had to purposefully reschool the kids, de-school them, unschool them, whatever you want to call it, but to slowly and purposefully wean them off of me. And it was quite a process, and it's too long to really talk about here, but every year when I start off school, I go in with a plan on how to get the kids to rely more on themselves and less on me. And since I started that, I've gotten them to get to the point where they trust in themselves and their imaginations pop out and they innovate more faster, so that now maybe it's by the time I hit December, I can let them run wild. Not all kids, not all classes, not all years, not every single thing. But usually, it's by December in which I'm getting the same stuff in which I used to get in May. And I don't know if I can accelerate it any farther. But getting back to where I started off, that the whole directions thing, you know, I think my goal, what I would love to see is that, you know, someday in the future, all I say is Lewis and Clark. And boom! Everybody kicks into action and is in creating and inventing and coming up with their own list of what they're going to do and their own set of objectives and goals and essential questions and everything else. And that's like my dream come true. And I kind of can slither off into a corner unnoticed for an hour, or, you know, I can just kind of mill around the kids and kids are asking me, you know, questions about how to go farther instead of just how to begin. You know, that is my goal, to totally, you know, be able, and I've had that a few times. I've had those classes where I could literally, I felt like I could just take off and drive to California and nobody would notice. Everything would get done and, you know, they would figure out everything on their own. And those are the classes that I've really enjoyed the most, and I think that they've gotten the most out of the year and being with me. But that is my goal. And I tell you, I think I kind of started going a little crazy in this podcast, and I got off on random things again. I got a little excited, and maybe I should have thought out my thoughts a little bit more carefully. But again, just I think we all need to think about how we give kids directions. And I think it's really great to have directions that are super clear, but at the same time, I think super clear directions can also be harmful to kids. I tell the kids at the beginning of the year, one of the things I do to get them comfortable with me is we talk a lot about how it is okay to be confused. It is okay to feel lost. It is okay to struggle. You know, someone, I don't know, the podcast or I read it or someone, I think someone said it. I heard someone say this is that we only grow stronger when we struggle. Pausing purposefully there. We only grow stronger after we struggle. And if you think about, you know, think about someone you know has really struggled in their lives and has come through it. Man, that's a strong individual. And I don't know if strong is the right word, but those people that I know that have made it through a lot in their life, oh, they are rich and they are deep, and I love to hang around and listen to them. And I learn a lot from them. You know, a lot of times people who have, you know, I don't know, think about some movie star, rock star, who's always had it easy. Never struggled to get to where they are. Look at all the problems they end up having. You know, with the kids, I talk about how if, you know, every day when you come to school, a couple of silly examples I give them, I said, you can come to school, you could have come to school today, and there could have been some big old naked guy waving to you on the road. You wouldn't have even noticed him, because you come the same way every day. You follow the same route. Know exactly where to go, and it becomes automatic, and you stop noticing things around you. But if all of a sudden you're lost and you're confused, you have to stop, you have to look around, you have to figure out how to get help, you have to figure out your way back, where you came from, where you're going. And, you know, it's hard to get kids, to get anybody comfortable with feeling lost. It's really hard to get kids comfortable failing. I don't know if I'm going to get eaten up for that. I don't know if that's the wrong thing to say. I should probably be thinking of a different way of saying that. But, you know, think about it. There's all those. Everyone's heard some kind of quote that it, you know, it's not about how many times it fails, but how many times you get up, or what happens when you get up, or something like that. Or, you know, Thomas Edison failed 20,000 times in his life for all his successes. Or you'll learn more from your failures than your successes, or, you know, I don't know. I should have looked up some of those quotes. But, you know, everyone that is successful has probably failed a lot. You know, you have to, almost. It's kind of just, you know, if you've really and truly succeeded and you've come up with some creative idea, you probably failed many, many times getting there. So, let's end this sucker right here, shall we? So, I think my point is, maybe sometimes start backing off in all the directions. Stop backing off on the sequential steps that you might give to a kid so that they know exactly how to do something. Or maybe, you know, if you have 10 steps in an assignment, just erase 3. See how it goes. Erase a few of them. And see what the kids come up with. And if it's a great assignment and the kids are into it, whatever they come up with will be okay and it will be correct. And you have to forget that just because it didn't turn out the way you wanted it to, that makes it wrong. Because, you know, I was talking to a teacher once. He had his kids do a play. He was frustrated because it wasn't turning out, and it didn't turn out how he expected. It wasn't as polished. It wasn't as perfect. You know, on and on. But, you know, I said to him, these kids did the whole darn thing themselves. Every part of it they did themselves, from the lines to the, you know, the set to the props to the stage managing. They did the whole thing themselves. And did they get more out of that? Even though they're going to make maybe some mistakes when they do it for the parents or for the school, and even though they might forget to bring a prop on stage because they didn't have enough time to practice because they were rewriting lines up until the last point, or would they get more out of just memorizing some purchased play and reciting the lines on stage and then being done with it? And, you know, I think it all comes back to simply trusting our kids. Trusting them. And I think, unfortunately, whenever we want to all of a sudden start trusting them, that we think we somehow are failing because they do poorly, because they haven't been trusted, and because their hands have been held for so many years, that when we finally say, all right, I'm going to trust you, they sometimes panic, and they kind of back way off and get really frustrated. But gotta stick with it, gotta lead them to it slowly, and most of all, you have got to build a bond and trust with them so that when they fall, they trust that you will be behind them and pick them up. You know, your job is not there to always catch them, but your job is there to help them up when they fall. And if they know that you'll be there to help them up and not push them down with an F, or to push them down with a, you should have, you know, written 10 sentences instead of 5, da-da-da-da, they'll take another risk. And the next time they do it, it'll be better. So we gotta trust them. Gotta trust them. So, give them a few less directions next year, would you? And while you're at it, you know, check out your house for various directions. When I came home, and I rode my bike to work today, so I wanted to take my digital camera and take a picture of that help sign, help button, but I didn't want to take the camera and have it bounce around on my bike rack. I came home and just randomly, as I was looking around, was looking for other things in my house that have directions on them, and it's amazing what kind of directions are on everyday kind of products. You know, the soda bottle or the juice bottle told you to twist the top to take it off. That was a tough one. There was a matchbox case which told you to close the box before striking. Okay, I'm with them on that one there. The yogurt had some ideas on the side of how to use the yogurt, and the directions stated to refrigerate the yogurt. Okay, maybe people didn't know to refrigerate it. The trash bags was a great one. I have a box of trash bags, and on the side of it, there were directions. Direction number one was take ends. Direction number two was tie the ends in a knot. And direction number three was bring to curb. And they had a picture for each one of those telling you how to do it, just in case you couldn't figure it out. And the best one of all is we had this package of hot dogs left over from my daughter's birthday party this weekend. And I thought to myself, there's no way there's directions on a package of hot dogs. But I took it out and I decided to look at it. And sure enough, it says directions. Open, then remove contents. And you know, I guess that's why it's in there, because whoever was barbecuing, they didn't know they were supposed to remove the contents, so I guess they just put it back in the fridge. And so that's it. I'll leave you with a funny story. There was a student teacher that was a teammate of mine once had. He worked for Black & Decker before he decided to become a teacher. He was an engineer. And he said whenever they finished designing a product, they would get all the engineers in a room, and they would come up with the five craziest things that a person can possibly do with that product. And that is what they'd list. You know how when you buy something, a blender, and it says, do not place hand in blender? Or they, you know, you might take, I don't know, you might get a, I'm trying to think of what, you know, like a chainsaw, and it might say, do not place hand on moving chain. And that's how those things end up on our labels. So, hey, thank you for listening. I tell you, Kevin Honeycutt, just in his last podcast, he was talking to someone and he said, why do people podcast? To become known or to find out about themselves? I don't know if he said that. I might have mangled it. But I tell you, I'm enjoying this podcasting thing. I am getting to know my own thoughts a little bit better. I don't know if they're coming out organized or not. But boy, I'm almost up to number 20 or so. Hope you're enjoying them. If you are and you made it this far, please leave me a comment. If you're listening to it in the car, or while you're jogging, or on the road, or at the beach, come back to your computer and leave me a comment, would you? I'd love to know who's listening, what you think, and if you can think of anything I can do to make it better. So, thanks for listening. This is Paul Bogish, Turkey Crossing, at Podomatic.com. Look me up, would you? All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.